Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Kelly Jean Kelly, Anne Ball, and Bruce Alpert. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and Anna Mateo will bring us this week's health report. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
Colombia and the country's main rebel group have signed a peace deal aimed at ending more than 50 years of conflict in the South American nation. Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos and the top rebel commander, known as Timochenko, met in the port city of Cartagena to sign the peace document. Leaders from Latin America gathered for the event. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and U.N. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon also attended. Many rebel leaders of the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, known as FARC, were among more than 2,500 people witnessing the signing. The peace deal between FARC and the government took 4 years to negotiate. The sides agreed to the deal in June. The negotiations mainly took place in Havana, Cuba, after starting in Oslo, Norway, in 2012. The signing, however, is not the final step. The agreement must be approved in a referendum to be held on October 2nd. At least 13% of registered voters must take part in the referendum for it to be valid. Public opinion studies show support for approving the agreement. The conflict between Colombia's government and FARC rebels has been long, complex, and deadly. It has been blamed for more than 220,000 deaths and has displaced millions of people over half a century. Ongoing fighting has hurt the country's economy and limited foreign investment. FARC started as a revolutionary movement of poor farmers in the mid-1960s. FARC funded its operations mainly through illegal trade in the drug cocaine. Much of those drugs went to the United States and Europe. Former President Alvaro Uribe has criticized this month's peace deal as giving amnesty to drug traffickers. But the current president, Juan Manuel Santos, has argued that compromise was needed to get rebels to turn over their weapons. Supporters of the deal say it calls for the government to work with coca farmers to get land titles. That part of the agreement addresses anger by small farmers about unequal land ownership. The deal also provides help in the transportation of crops other than coca leaves, which are used to make cocaine. FARC members can avoid prison if they admit their crimes and make reparations in what is being called a truth and reconciliation process. FARC would become a legal political party and gain representation in Congress. If the agreement is approved by the October referendum, FARC's 7,000 fighters would begin moving to special areas. They would then hand over their weapons to United Nations-supported observers. FARC has also agreed to cooperate with efforts to remove mines from the country. Colombia is estimated to have the second largest number of mines in the world after Afghanistan. I'm Mario Ritter.
American Arnold Palmer, known as the King of Professional Golf, died on Sunday in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He was 87 years old. The head of his company, Arnold Palmer Enterprises, confirmed that Palmer died from issues related to heart problems. He was admitted to a hospital Thursday, but his health reportedly worsened over the past few days. Arnold Palmer is considered among the most important players in the history of golf. He won 7 major championships and 62 other Professional Golfers Association tour events. Before Palmer's long career, golf was considered a sport mainly for rich people. Many Americans liked his aggressive style of play and the way he seemed at ease with both presidents and the golfing public. Palmer became a sports star at about the same time television moved into most American homes. His good looks, devilish smile, and go-for-broke thinking helped make golf appealing to one and all. Palmer was a leader in sports marketing. He became one of the first athletes to earn millions of dollars by appearing in advertisements. Some 40 years after his last PGA Tour win, he still rates among the highest earners in golf. It is estimated Palmer was worth close to $675 million. As a spokesperson for products, Palmer's image was everywhere. He made ads for motor oil, ketchup, and financial services companies. Even as late as 2011, Palmer was number 3 on Golf Digest's list of top earners at $36 million a year. Only Woods and Phil Mickelson earned more money. As a golfer, Palmer became famous for winning and losing golf tournaments. Palmer came back from 7 shots behind to win a U.S. Open championship. And he once lost a 7-shot lead during the final 9 holes to lose a U.S. Open. Doctors told Palmer that he had prostate cancer in 1997, but the disease was found and treated early. He returned to golf a few months later. Palmer's other love was flying. He piloted his first aircraft in 1956. Palmer flew airplanes the way he played golf. He set a record in 1976 when he went around the earth in 57 hours, 25 minutes, and 42 seconds in a Lear 36 plane. He continued flying until he failed to renew his flying license at age 81. He was just short of 20,000 hours of flying as a pilot. Through it all, he came into contact with more people than he could possibly remember. "I'm not interested in being a hero," Palmer said, suggesting that too much was made about his return from cancer. "I just want to play some golf." I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
Gennaro lives in a village in Peru. He is hoping to raise $1,300. Gennaro says he needs the money to grow more coffee trees. He sells coffee seeds, known as beans, to support himself and his two children. Mrs. Pugh lives in Vietnam. She is hoping for a $2,000 loan to raise pigs so she can earn more money for her family. And in Ghana, a young man named Richard is looking for $1,275 to pay his college tuition and buy books to take classes. These are just three of the small loans that Kiva, a group in California, is seeking to finance through donations. Kiva only lists the first names of people requesting loans. Premal Shaff helped start Kiva 10 years ago. He is now the charitable group's president. Shaw said Kiva makes giving simple. People are not asked to solve big problems like climate change, poverty, or war, he said. Instead, they are asked to help individual people make their lives and their families' lives better. There is a basic human connection, he said. People often don't feel they can do very much to produce sustainable change. But here they can make a big change, helping people and their families. A Kiva loan can help someone who cannot get a loan from a bank, develop a business, or go to college. But it also helps others, Shaw said. People who earn more money will spend more money in their communities and maybe even give jobs to neighbors. In Ghana, 25-year-old Sarah Aya Mansour said she is trying to earn enough money to support herself and her family. She sells oils, gifts, and other things at a small store. Aya Mansour has received two $400 loans from Kiva to help her add products to sell to customers. She has already paid off the first loan and is working to repay the second. It has been a big help, she told VOA from Ghana. Aya Mansour is not married and does not have children, but she said she is now able to provide more help to her extended family. I'm hoping I will be able to sell even more in the future, Aya Mansour said. But she added that the poverty in her village means many people do not have enough money to spend much at her store or other businesses. Here is how Kiva works. On the charity's website, hundreds of requests for loans are listed by individuals who state what they will do with the money. People wanting to donate can narrow down the request by country or area. Or they can choose what they want their money to do, whether it be to help someone pay for school or expand a business or farm. People who decide they want to help can do so on the internet. The minimum donation or loan is $25. An individual donation is added to others to produce the loan amount requested. So if someone asks for a $400 loan, the amount could be funded by 16 $25 donations. Last week, a Kiva donor received an email saying he received repayments of $5.58 on three loans. Maria Eugenia, for example, repaid 94 cents of her $25 loan so she could add new products to her store in Colombia. When each $25 is returned, the donor can find another person to help or get his or her money returned. There have been lots of success stories, said Kiva President Premal Shaw. One of them is Litawi, 22, of Zimbabwe. She received a $500 loan and business training from CamFed, a Kiva partner. That helped her open up three businesses, raising chickens, a store selling homemade drinks, and another store selling household products. All this has given her a feeling of independence, Linda Wee said. If I want to help someone who is in need, I can just take my money and help, she added. Kiva is also moving forward. After difficult times during the 2008 recession, Kiva brought in $150 million in loan funding over the past year, Premal Shah said. That is a record. Over its 10 years, the charity has raised $880 million from 1.5 million people. It has provided loans to over 2 million people in 83 countries. Over 80% of the money went to women. I'm Bruce Alpert.
The human eye is unable to see black holes in space, but telescopes with special tools can help find black holes by seeing how they affect nearby stars. In February, the Japanese Space Agency sent its Astro-H satellite into orbit around the Earth. The satellite's job was to examine large structures in space, like huge black holes that exist at the center of most galaxies. Galaxies are large groups of stars. Scientists estimate there are between 100 and 200 billion galaxies in the universe. The Astro-H satellite fell apart after only a month in space. But in that short time, Astro-H was able to gather important information. It sent back data about the Perseus cluster, a grouping of galaxies in the star constellation Perseus. The Perseus cluster is home to hundreds of galaxies. They are 240 million light-years from Earth. Black holes are areas where the pull of gravity is so strong that not even light can escape. Usually they happen after very big, supergiant stars explode. The exploded star turns into something called a supernova. It is very bright, but short-lived. Supernovas create the largest explosions in space. The material remaining after the supernova explosion collapses. Gravity pulls or crushes all the matter into a very small space. When light can no longer escape that space, it is known as a black hole. The Japanese satellite Astro-H was carrying an instrument called an X-ray spectrometer. It was able to measure the way gas flows at the center of the Perseus cluster. What it found was that the superheated gas at the center of the cluster flowed more calmly than researchers expected. And that told them something about how black holes work and how galaxies are formed. Brian McNamara is an astrophysicist with the University of Waterloo in Canada.
And that gives us a very precise measurement of how much energy is being pumped into this gas by supermassive black holes. And so it allows us to form a more complete picture of how galaxies evolve, how the stars and the gas that eventually will cool out like rain to form the stars evolves over cosmic time.
The scientists are also looking at the hot plasma, another kind of matter, and gases that surround galaxies.
This is gas that has not cooled out and condensed out like rain in our atmosphere to form stars, planets, life, for example. And it's the potential for the future, and we're trying to understand what the future destiny of this galaxy and many other galaxies would be.
McNamara says that supermassive black holes may change how galaxies form and change over time.
The energy released by these giant black holes is very tightly coupled to these atmospheres, which is the stuff out of which future stars will form.
And what that means, he says, is that these huge black holes can affect the rate at which a galaxy grows. I'm Ann Ball.
This is What's Trending Today. Jose Fernandez was one of professional baseball's most exciting young players in the United States. Fernandez was a rising star for Major League Baseball's Miami Marlins. The team plays its home games in Miami, Florida. He was born in nearby Cuba. Fernandez died in a boating accident early Sunday morning. He was only 24 years old. Public safety officials say he was on a 10-meter-long boat with two other people. They said the boat was going at full speed when it struck rocks in waters near Miami Beach, killing all three people. People around the United States and in Latin American countries are reacting to the death of Jose Fernandez. Fernandez left Cuba with his mother when he was only 15 years old. 5 years ago, Fernandez signed an agreement to play for the Miami Marlins. A short time later, he made his first appearance in Major League Baseball. In 2013, Fernandez won an award for being one of the best first-year players in baseball. In his four seasons as a Major League Baseball player, he pitched two times in the All-Star Game, which honors the sport's best players. In his last game on September 20th, he helped the Marlins defeat the Washington Nationals. He pitched eight innings and prevented Washington from scoring any runs. While Fernandez was a great pitcher, many people say they will miss his personality. Baseball teams are remembering Fernandez in different ways. Some teams hung a large piece of cloth with his name near the field. The Marlins did not play on Sunday because of his death. And that's What's Trending Today. I'm Dan Friedel.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. For today's report, we talk about the dangers not of an illness, but of medicines, antimicrobial medicines. Health experts around the world are more and more concerned about the overuse of antimicrobials. A growing number of bacteria and other disease-causing organisms are developing resistance to these drugs. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization says the growing resistance is a threat to people and animals alike. The FAO recently noted an increased use and abuse of antimicrobial medicines in both human and animal health care. It said their use and abuse has led to a growing number of disease-causing microbes
that are resistant to traditional medicines. FAO officials say this can be seen, for example, in multidrug-resistant tuberculosis. The problem is so serious that UN officials called a high-level meeting to consider the dangers of antimicrobial resistance. Antimicrobial resistance is also called AMR. But just how widespread is antimicrobial use?
We don't really know how much of the antimicrobials, including antibiotics, are being used in food and agriculture.
Juan Lubroth is an expert on animal health. He serves as the chief veterinary officer for the FAO. He says there are many unanswered questions about the manufacturing and marketing of antimicrobial drugs.
In fact, we don't really know how much is being made, who is buying, who is selling, how much is the international traffic, either as drugs ready to be used or the active ingredient inside a drug that is then formulated someplace else.
Dr. Lubroth says the overuse of antibiotics involves everything. Humans, animals, and agriculture get caught in what he calls a cycle of disease transmission.
We can get sick, they can get sick, they can die. They need the antibiotics to be given in the proper way so they can recover. So it's not only about food and agriculture, it's also about our dogs and cats, our mascots.
Misuse of antimicrobials includes failing to follow directions and possibly taking someone else's medicine. Lubroth admits that even he has misused antibiotics.
Even I'm guilty. My physician may have given me antibiotics to take for the course of a week, 7 days, and I stopped at day 6. Well, that's bad. That's not good. That's a misuse of the antibiotics.
Failure to follow directions when taking a medicine is one way germs can develop a resistance to a drug. The FAO says that antimicrobial medicines are critical in the treatment of farm animals and plants. Their use, it says, is essential to food security, human well-being, and animal welfare. Lubroth says the Food and Agriculture Organization has developed a 4-part action plan for antimicrobial resistance.
One is to create the awareness among the general public of the issue. Two would be to have the evidence, have the surveillance in place that I can monitor when the antimicrobial resistance appears, and I report it in a timely fashion.
The action plan calls for strengthening governmental agencies that deal with public health, food, and agriculture. It also calls for sharing of information with each other and with medical experts. Another part of the plan is to provide support for good practices in food and agricultural systems and the effective use of antimicrobials. Such drugs are often used in small amounts in animal feed to support growth. Once in farm animals, they become part of the food chain.
I think that the consumers should be empowered to really push their governments or their food providers that they want safe food, wholesome food. I think we can all agree on that. We may disagree on some of the specifics of how to get there, but I think that the consumer and the voice of the consumer has to be heard.
Lubroth says the long-term consequences of not being able to use antimicrobials because of resistance would be terrible. He adds that the medicines bring a global public good to the planet. I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.